John, it's the same story every time.
All around the world.
Everybody always asks me about you. Where's John? Why isn't John coming? How's John doing?
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate being missed.
Yeah, it's like the number one question I get at conferences and stuff.
My fear is that I'm going to disappoint everyone when they finally meet me.
You've also been MIA on Slack. Yeah. You're just incommunicado, man. You're abandoning your community.
My life lately has been kind of crazy with so we have Slack at work, and it's all I can do to keep up with that. I'm kind of in this weird, not supervisor, but kind of supervisor position. So a lot of stuff funnels through me. So I'm working with all our PMs, and then I'm working with our developers who have questions about either specs or requirements. And they're a team in Bulgaria. So I try to field a lot of their questions and get a lot of the work that they need done during the day when most people are on for them. And then I'll shuffle that back to them before I end my day so that they have something they can work on during my evening.
What are they, like GMT plus 3 or something like that? Yeah, something 4? Like,
I don't know. I can't keep up with it, but I just know it's like midnight or whatever, or in the AMs for them. So,
yep.
And they do a lot on their side too. Like they have to they have to sometimes be online for code reviews and stuff, you know, in the evening time. So it's just a part of being part of a global team, I guess.
It is. And I do everything I can to avoid that. I do work with some people that are around the world, but I definitely just try to avoid that business model of having to just regularly, you know, to be on calls all nights of the hour or hours of the night, either one.
There's night and there's hours. Yeah. They happen at the same
they
time.
Do. Yes. Like, you know, it's been a long week already, John, and it's Monday.
I know. It really has.
But yeah, you know, we got to get you to it. When is TDX? What's it called? What's the one in Texas called? Maybe we can do that one. Texas Dreaming. That's it. When is that? It's already passed, probably, right?
I bet it passed.
You know, we need to go to Cactus Force. Everybody, I always hear the best things about that conference. Like, honestly, better things than I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they all have their different specialties, but I feel like Cactus Force is kind of more up our alley. I ran into, is it Marissa? You remember Marissa?
I think so, yeah.
Ran into her, and she said to tell you hi. Actually, she came to the, what's it called?
The meetup?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Marissa Hambleton, is that? I just want to make sure I got her name right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, wait, man, when did we meet her? I mean, or maybe I might be mixing you, and I don't know if we met at the same time, but I feel like I've known her forever. And she's been doing the Cactus Force thing, kind of organizing that for a long time. But yeah, Chuck and a bunch of people always go to it, and they say it's great. You know, it's kind of like it's more of an in-depth, kind of pretty technical. That'd be cool. Where's it?
Yeah,
it's Scottsdale, I think, right? That'd be great.
I thought about that one several times because I have family there, so it might be an excuse to go visit.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, TDX was interesting, John. We've seen this, what's it been, a year now since Salesforce has had to do, some pretty brutal budgeting and cost cutting, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I noticed it at Dreamforce, but you can tell that TDX is, they're doing things on a budget now.
Oh, really?
I mean, obviously it's always been on a budget, but you can tell I get the sense of the reduced budget, but what's weird about it, and I gotta give compliments, is, I'm just guessing. I don't know what their budget was. But you know, again, I feel like you feel this everywhere, but there's more space. And I don't know if it's because they didn't have as much budget to buy as many like big stuffed animals and huge sets and all this kind of stuff everywhere that it,
yeah,
I just feel like there's more space. They definitely,
well, you went to Dreamforce too, right?
I did go to Dreamforce.
Kind of your immediate comparison.
No, you can't. I don't think you can. You can't compare those.
I know, but in your head, is that kind of what you're thinking, like in terms of space? Because it's the same conference center, right?
Yeah, maybe so. I'm trying to compare it to previous TDXs.
Okay,
but there's, you know, I feel like there wasn't as much stuff, therefore there was more room. They also did, I feel like, a much better job. And again, I feel like I'm kind of mixing up Dreamforce and TDX here, but a much better job of every event I try to go to, I was able to get in, and there was, plenty of seats in most of them. which was great.
That could have just been the economics of the situation, not just on the Salesforce side, but maybe just people not able to go.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what the numbers were. I don't think they announced it. And
like if budget's tight and you had to choose between Dreamforce and TDX, I mean, although I think that if you're a builder on the platform, you should be going to TDX versus Dreamforce. But people go to Dreamforce because that's the big show.
And I know, and people who have never been to Dreamforce, this is what I've noticed. People that have never been to Dreamforce, even if they're more the builder types, they want to go to Dreamforce because that's the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you go to it once and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to TDX from now on. Well, because you know, your hotel's twice as expensive. You probably can't get a hotel nearby. Mm-hmm. You can't go to a restaurant nearby.
Yeah.
It's hard to even walk on a street in that area of Soma, without bumping, you know, you're constantly in crowds, lines and crowds. And TDX is just not near as bad.
Yeah. Good luck getting an Uber.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah. And sometimes depending on how adventurous you are, I mean, could be a good thing. I met a couple people where we shared like a taxi or something. Actually, what we ended up sharing was these black cars. Like when they don't have anything to do, they'll drive up down that spot.
Oh yeah.
And they'll be like, hey, where do you need to go?
Yep. Just make a little extra money while they're waiting. But I did something a little different this year though. I didn't really go to any of the big, I did go to the main keynote, but they, I sat on the aisle because I was afraid I was going to have to,
cause you have to go to the restroom.
Well, yeah, you know, I have TBS. So.
Old man syndrome.
Yeah, tiny bladder syndrome. But I wanted to sit on the aisle because I thought I was going to have to bug out at some point. And you know, they have all these ushers, which are great because they actually help you just get like right into their seats. But she came up to me. She's like, hey, can you scoot in towards the middle? I'm like, yeah, I really want to sit against the aisle because I'm probably going to have to get out at some point. And she's like, well, okay, well then go sit at the very back row. And I was like, am I in trouble already? I didn't even say anything yet. I'm in trouble. So I go sit at the very back row and I just, I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see, I was far enough away from those big screens that I couldn't. And there was this is a positive thing. At some point into the session, they got into a lot of code and, or just a lot of stuff on screen that was kind of relatively small, a lot of it being code. And I couldn't see it at all. Mm. And so I found myself losing the thread and kind of just checking out.
Yeah.
So I did end up at about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes in to that keynote. I just left. It's videotape, right? I can go watch it. That's another thing. I haven't gotten a look yet, but that to me, that's a real measure of these conferences is what percentage of the stuff makes it onto YouTube or whatever, Salesforce Plus or on. Is Salesforce Plus still a thing? Are they still doing it? Still a thing. Okay. Yeah. But this is made available to people who, you know, obviously you can only go to so many sessions when you're there, you can't even go to 5% of them. So it's nice if, and for people who can't go, it's nice if they can make, you know, ideally all of that available. I know some things they don't, like I don't think they ever record True to the Core or whatever, because they're so transparent and honest that they can't possibly. It's so true that you can't handle the truth. So therefore, we're not going to put it on YouTube. Speaking of that's another session I intentionally did not go to.
You can't have those unscripted moments.
I don't believe in them anymore. I've been enough of them.
To the keynotes?
No, to the True to the Core.
Oh.
It's a lot of the same stuff. I would get up and ask the same question I asked 10 years ago. Same questions. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. Why is deployment an absolute disaster? Yeah. Why is the language stuck? Why is packaging just, you know? But I'm, you know.
Oh, I can. This is where you get up there. One of my rants.
Well, and I want to be fair. Like those are the things. If I got my chance to go up and ask about the stuff that gives me pain, there's a lot of positives. And in fact, I wanted to mention we were just talking about it before we hit the record button. There was the question in the Slack a couple of weeks ago that was we just looked this up.
What is the best way approach tools for bidirectional sync of two or more orgs?
No, that was a different one. what is the current state of the developer experience on the Salesforce platform?
Right.
And there's a lot of good stuff. There's been a lot of improvements.
Yeah.
I will continue to give a lot of praise to the CLI team. I don't use VS Code, but I don't use it for Salesforce development, but
same.
It looks like, you know, it's a good tool, and they you know, are investing heavily in it, and certainly is much better than that Eclipse piece of doo-doo that they used to have.
I do make sure that my ID, my IntelliJ ID, looks as close to VS Code as it can.
I notice that. I don't do that. I do. I like my ID to look like an ID, not a fancy text editor.
Well, I have to do that because I'm not sure if I'm allowed
to. Oh, to have an ID? You can use AI, but you can't use an IDE.
No, technically, in a big company, you're supposed to have approved tools, right? And my IDE is not on the approved tool list, but VS Code is, so.
I heard you're on the approved tool list.
Oh, I'm approved as a tool, definitely.
Oh, man. But yeah, I actually went to a couple of packaging sessions, one on unlocked packages, which I think there's a lot of promise in unlocked packages.
With that idea of using them more.
No, but I'll tell you, John, the practicality behind what the main target use cases for unlocked packages are for, it's not even close to being ready. You simply cannot use them.
Well, I can't get something to work as simple as organizing my code in a folder structure. Now, I'm going to tangent a little bit because this is the same tangent I want to go on earlier, is that I have this lab project that I call lab, and it's where all my kind of experimental stuff
happens. That's a creative name for it, John.
Well, it's where all my experimental stuff, and I've got things that are going to be moved into production in that lab directory or in that lab project. And I've organized things by modules. But one of the frustrating things is I can't effectively manage it all because of the way the source tracking works. I can't move something because by default, when you download something, it tries to default load it into the main default of your project from Salesforce. And if you move something out of that, especially an object, source tracking sees that as delete and create.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, when you do that with an object, an S object metadata, it wants to delete the object.
Oh. Yeah, I can't use source tracking. If you do anything with branching whatsoever, not even branching. If you ever use git reset, or if you're merging or whatever, it just can't handle it. It's just the model. It's the fundamental model, and it's not, again, it's not the CLI people's fault. It's the damn model.
I get what you're saying, but I think to a certain extent,
tools... I'm going to call James Carville.
What?
What did he say? It's the economy, stupid, right? It's the model, stupid.
Well, and maybe this is a symptom to the problem, but I think we're all trying to make these systems aware of the idiosyncrasies of working on that on the Salesforce platform. So we expect these tools to be aware of those type of things.
Hang on.
Not happy. I've been smiling so much. So.
That's not it.
That's not the right
one. No, I was looking for the.
What was that?
Hang on. Oh, I don't want to derail the show for this.
Oh, that's worth it. Derail it.
Let's see.
Who's going to complain?
It doesn't exist. How does it not exist? It was James Carville, right? The Raging Cajun. All right, we'll go. Yeah, sorry. Continue with your story. I will work.
Well,
on
I think
that
I'm reaching the end of my story.
Oh, did you?
And it was So two things need to have happen. Either the model needs to get better, as you say, or these tools like the CLI has to be more aware of Salesforce and to know that if you move an object from one folder to another, the metadata for an object from one folder to another, that's not a delete.
Yeah.
Don't delete my S object in Salesforce.
So you're moving it just from so you're using the feature that they now allow you to have your metadata in different subdirectories or whatever. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm trying to organize the code a little bit better because I'm creating.
And that confuses the CLI?
Yes.
Really?
If you have source tracking yes, absolutely.
Well,
not only
how would it know? What? Okay, let me ask you this. What would your heuristic be for detecting when someone just moves a file on their operating system from one directory to another? What's your heuristic for being absolutely or just knowing that is a move? Because the operating system doesn't inform anything. Oh, this file was moved. No, it's a file is no longer there and a new file is over here somewhere else.
I know.
Was that a move? I don't know. This is why Git doesn't track moves. It detects moves And you can even customize like the, not the effort, but the, I guess, threshold that Git uses to think it is detecting changes. But that's why, like, you know, if you do move some stuff around in Git, it'll say, oh, you need to do Git status. It's, oh, you moved this from here to here. It doesn't know you moved it. It's, it's just like, well, this blob of content that used to be right here looks a whole lot like this other blob of content that just showed up over here.
Sure.
And if it's close enough, just by default, I don't know what the, I forget what kind of metric it uses, but if it's pretty close, Git will say, oh yeah, you moved that. And then you can, there's some command switch to make it like try harder. I think it's literally called try harder or something like that.
Well, I think if the CLI provided a move method, then it could inform the source tracking that it was a move.
Well, also,
and IDEs like Visual Studio Code and IntelliJ and Illuminated Cloud by nature could implement that, and we could get a true move out of it.
I agree, because this, well, the CLI also.
And that's where I'm saying that the tooling has to make itself aware and available, because you're right. The model says that it's a delete and a new, create new.
Yeah.
But we know in the Salesforce world that can't be true, because we can't delete that object.
Well, and this is the benefit, like the advantage that the CLI has over some generic tool like Git, which is it knows where these things are allowed to be. The names and the directories that these things were in, like if you have a, you know, John's item __C custom object, and that's the name of the file, and you move it from the objects directory in one of your, or the, from the objects directory in one of your trees to the objects directory in another one of your trees, and it's got the same file name, that by definition, because we don't have namespaces, by definition it has to be the same object.
Yeah.
So the CLI could use, I mean, again, not meaning to add to these guys' backlog, but it seems like because they know the layouts, the rules of the layout, the rules of file naming, and also a lot of these things in the metadata itself, in the contents of the file, have unique identifiers to kind of identify this is the name of this thing. And you think it could use that to detect moves?
Yeah. You would think.
Well, again, there's probably a lot of dangers. There's probably a lot of dragons there. Again, getting too presumptive about whether something's been moved or not, or is it really the same thing? And if the file's not well formed at the time it was moved, like it couldn't be, like say your XML was messed up or something. I'm hearing that. I was like, what am I hearing in my, when I talk? It's the, whatever the hell that is out there. Yeah. They're remodeling this floor in our studio here. Yeah. Like I said, if the XML is not well formed, do you kind of parse through and still try to find out what was the name of the thing, or do you punt and be like, no, that wasn't a move, we can't tell. There's a lot of challenges with that.
There is, but I mean, if we're going to improve on developer experience, we have to either have a solution for it or fix the model so that it's a non-issue.
Yeah, I think the model has to be completely rebooted. Or we're stuck in this. It's, I mean, I still see just on, I see teams at our company. I see teams, I talk to people, I see other teams. I think the biggest challenge that almost virtually every team has is just getting their shit deployed.
Yeah.
Safely, securely, knowing that it is what it's supposed to be, which by the way, is kind of impossible. No, there's no known good build. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, there's no blessed set of bits. You may have a blessed set of bits in your hard drive, but after you deploy, you'll deploy that to your org, and then do a full pull of metadata. I promise it won't match what you have on your hard drive bit for bit. It's going to be different. Yeah. It's going to be different.
Well, it's also risky. I mean, we ourselves spend.
But you can't certify. You can't certify that this is good. I, as a manager, I approve this. We're going to deploy this tonight. You're not going to get that set of bits. It's going to be a different set of bits, and you just hope that it works, which is why everyone has 7 p.m. conference calls on fucking Friday nights. Bleep myself on Friday night.
That's me every 2 weeks.
I know.
You know when we start our build, our quote unquote build, at 3 p.m. Because we have a ceremony around it where we take all of our metadata object changes, we create a package out of that to validate that, and then we take all our code changes and validate that, and we have some pre deployment activities and post deployment activities. There are things we don't touch. We're not allowed to deploy certain layouts and certain record pages.
No, there's all kinds
we're not
of
allowed
things,
to, yeah. We're not allowed to deploy permissions, none of that. So all of that ends up being a manual activity that we have to do post deployment.
Yeah.
So first we have to validate everything. And because we don't have any known bits, we don't know if all of our testing that passed in our staging environment will pass in production.
You have no idea.
Until we run the validation.
Yeah.
So that's why we have to start it like way early in the day to try to get get it validated.
And how long does that even take? That's this is
hours.
I know.
Hours, yeah. because we're on Hyperforce. That's added time to our build, but yeah, it's just the whole process takes hours. And we have people waiting on us. We have QA waiting on us going, and all we're trying to do is get the bits into Salesforce so they can test it.
I bet you on a typical 1,000-hour Salesforce project, you're going to be spending 300 hours futzing around with this stuff.
Yeah.
Deploying, waiting, trying to figure out why the set of bits you wanted wasn't the set of bits you got, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much. We got to get better at this. So this, you know, anyway, I wanted to, because this was a good question, and I wanted us as a community to come up with some good answers to that. And I think we did some, but I don't know. I feel like we could have done better. We could have created some kind of like, I was thinking, should we create like a big a Google Doc and everyone can contribute to it, or like a big Markdown file on GitHub and everyone can pull requests or changes in or something, and we can just, as a community, build this. Like, what's good? You know, what's the state of things? Good, not so good, and really bad.
We'd be spitting in the ether, wouldn't we? It's not like we'd be able to affect the.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think as long as it comes from a fair and sincere place, I think it's valuable information for, you know, the people at Salesforce that can move the needle on these things.
Yeah. And I do feel their pain to a certain extent. I mean, there are things in our system that I want to improve, but with the constant churn of quote unquote business approved activities that take priority over everything, and my technical debt, which I'm allowed maybe 20% of our time to work on.
No, okay.
You know, there's,
that's a pretty decent budget for
it debt. Is, but the reality is I have so many people, and they get eaten up by the stuff that has to get built, the business approved stuff.
Well, I want to close the loop on TDX. I think, you know, for, you know, next year, I would say, you know, do the, whatever you did on they rejiggered the rooms and everything to more big rooms. And I don't know if it's more rooms or certain or rooms of the, they got the room sizing right or something, but whatever they did, like, do that again. That worked really well. Mm. Also, I will say, so, you know, everything's AI and so at TDX, everything's AI and data cloud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, data cloud is what Salesforce, that's part of their strategy on how do we keep growing? Let's get everyone to buy data cloud. And the other one is, you know, generative AI. Like,
that's surprising. What is this whole push for data cloud?
It costs $108,000 to get started.
Okay.
Just in licensing.
There you go. That answers it.
Did you need to know anything else?
No, that.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. No, I mean
Benioff's got some land to buy.
Yes, he does. I don't know if there's any land left for him to buy out there.
Yeah, between him, Oprah, and The Rock.
And
they're
going
to own all of Hawaii. Yeah,
Ellison. No, don't leave Ellison.
Oh, and Ellison, yeah.
He's got his own.
They're all good. They're just going to own it all.
I know. Well, we're just going to be the serfs on the plantation or whatever.
Yeah.
The AI stuff is getting pretty cool. I think Salesforce, I mean, the big question is, you know, when and how much does it cost? Actually, that's the question on all this stuff always, right? Am I going to be able to actually use this stuff? Is it really real?
How are generics coming along?
They appear to be, you know, dead on the vine.
Really?
Well, how long have they been talking about generics officially at conferences now?
Only the last 2 years, I think.
At least 2 years. And it just got pushed out again to an unknown future time. Oh. It's not dev preview. It's not on the roadmap for any specific release, even in dev preview. I mean, I think that it hit some kind of challenges. I have no idea what's involved in the Apex runtime and what they do to get it to run safely and securely and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of challenges. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, Daniel Bollinger's, you know, he'd probably would love to ship that feature. So I did not go to that session, though. I kind of wanted to, but there's other, I don't know. I just didn't make it. Mainly, I was gonna go to the replay of it, but I got such good secondhand information from other people that went to it that I feel like I didn't need to go.
Okay.
But that's always a good session, so keep doing it. No, I wanted to say, though, I went to a Data Cloud session, which was really good. And I was really impressed. There's a woman named, I wrote down her name because I wanted to share her information. Danielle Laregui, I'm going to guess. Laregui. We'll put her in the, I got her Twitter link here. I'll put her in the show notes. She was, it was like three PMs, I think. And she was, well, she was not a PM. It's like a PM or somebody in her. And she is a, she's like a, what do you call them? A dev?
Evangelist.
Yeah. This, yeah. You know, and, I'd never seen her before, but she, it was a super, she did a really good job in that session. Really seemed to, from the way that my mind works, pulled a lot of stuff together for me on how Data Cloud works. And I forget what exactly the session was, but it was really about how Data Cloud, it's not just about Salesforce data. I mean, you know, it's runs in AWS. So like, you know, they, you can hook up your, you know, your Redshift, your S, you know, if you have a data lake in S3 already, if you've got Snowflake, if you got, I say Redshift, whatever, like Salesforce can essentially bring those things in to like a virtually bring them into Data Cloud. They're not really in Data Cloud. I mean, the question is, what is Data Cloud? And the answer is it's
everything.
You can't think of it in terms of physical boundaries. You have to think of it in terms of the stuff's all in AWS. And I think they do some stuff outside of AWS too, but I think it's not as real time or seamless, and you may have more fees with that. I'm not sure. But they're, you know, the fact that you can all that stuff I mentioned, if it's an AWS, it you can basically make it appear that it's all in Data Cloud, and it's, and performance wise, it essentially is, right? Because it's all, they probably do things to make sure you're in the same availability zone, at least region. It's really cool. Anyway, the way she was explaining stuff made a whole lot of sense to me. And then she was like, hey, I'm doing this session later. That's Data Cloud for developers. And I was like, oh, cool. And I looked and didn't have much else going on at that time. So I went to that one, and that was great too. So I will say I came away from TDX thinking, okay, really everyone should probably learn Data Cloud to some degree, maybe enough to at least go like pass the cert or something exam. I need to do this. I'm the worst hypocrite. And I would say that I would follow her stuff, what she's producing, just because she seems to be like the go-to Data Cloud dev evangelist. And so, yeah, I've made sure I followed her on Twitter, and I'll probably be shooting some questions to her at some point. So I doubt she listens to the show, but if she does, hi, Danielle, and expect some questions from me at some point. Yeah, I think she's a good resource for this, for Data Cloud. She just, again, the way my mind works, she pulled it together for me like has not happened before.
I'll have to check that stuff out then.
I'm sure those sessions are, surely, hopefully they are, because they were both in big rooms. Hopefully they were recorded and they're on YouTube now.
Yeah.
People are at work. Several people have called me out for the whole, we talk about how we're old and stuff, which I do genuinely feel it, but I get it. It's not
true, though.
I get it. There are people older than us. But I feel old.
Yeah.
And partly because I've been in this ecosystem for 20 plus years. It's aging me.
Yeah. I don't, I mean,
but it's funny how, yeah, people are like, you're not old. Shut up. I got that from several people.
Really?
Yep. And I'm like, maybe we shouldn't.
Well, they haven't that. Met me
maybe
yet.
We're being insensitive.
They haven't met me yet. So
maybe we're being insensitive to our true elders, John. at least one of the people has met you that said this. So,
okay. I'm still old.
Yeah.
You're as old as you feel, right?
I guess so.
Or as old as you are.
I'm feeling old these days. Well, John, we have a lot of AI stuff.
Ooh.
Yep.
Like the AI robot from OpenAI. What was that thing called?
By the way, sorry if you're probably there are noises going on out here that you may be able to hear on the show. Like, especially I keep hearing like a low level.
I hear
the buzz
outside of my headphones, but I don't think I'm hearing it in my headphones.
I do. It's like, cause I can hear when like, the noise gate closes or when it opens, I can hear it. Anyway, it is what it is.
I'm old. I have bad ears.
Yeah, I do too. Too much music and shooting of guns.
Oh yeah. I've got that on my left ear.
That's me too. My left ear is basically dead.
I think it's gotten better. At least it's not tin anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I told you about that.
No.
Yeah. I was at my brother-in-law's and we're shooting a gun. And my nephew was handing me one of his guns, which is weird because my brother-in-law, he likes to collect old classic guns and they're heavy. They're beasts.
Yeah.
And my nephew hands me one of his and it's a paper. It's cardboard. It's so light. So anyways, I was getting instructions from him on the features because I need to know the safety and all that kind of stuff. And so I popped the headphones off so I could hear him. So and then I get ready to shoot it. I forgot to put the earmuffs back on.
Just one shot?
On just that one ear.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the ear where I have it on.
It
blew my ear.
Okay. So we have, there are studies coming out every day about how AI is, affecting developer productivity.
In a positive way?
Well, it depends on whose study you read. So obviously like GitHub or aka Microsoft's study shows that it's amazing. But I forget there was another
study. I can tell you who's going to love it.
There was a study that I had in the show notes for last week, but I don't think I don't think we got to it. Which was quite mixed. The amount of code that ended up getting deleted or, issues caused let's face it, LLMs, they're just trying to figure out what the next token is at any point. They're not really smart. They if you squint hard enough, they look smart, but they're really not smart. And so they do produce a lot of garbage, at least in this current iteration. And you got to deal with that. And there's certain things.
In the same way you have your Google foo, you have to know how to ask Google the right question. You have to know how to ask the AI the right question.
Well, in some of these fields, like I use GitHub Copilot, and it's just, I don't ask it anything. You can ask it stuff, but I rarely do that. I just do the thing where it's like just constantly like kind of like completing little snippets and shit for me. Okay. Gotta stop cussing. And it's pretty useful, but sometimes I have to just hit I think it's shift command O to turn it off completely because it's just banging its head against the wall, doing the wrong thing over and over. And it gets very aggressive because I think they've bumped up the perform because, initially, like when everyone started using GitHub Copilot, like it was kind of slow because they probably didn't have as many, like, I don't know, compute resources for it or something. And now it's gotten real fast, which means it can just absolutely spam you with stuff. And it's in your editor. It's doing it in your editor.
It's like having a backseat driver every time
you
take a turn.
And I'm just like, no, 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 no. And then it's like, and if you want to...
And if you go left here and take a right, you'll get there quicker, like two seconds quicker.
So this is one study. Who did this? GitClear. Yeah, this is the one. Okay, so they make developer tooling, this GitClear. But they studied 153 million lines of changed code, comparing changes done in 2023 versus previous years when AI was not relevant. So however good of a study that is. But code churn, which is the percentage of lines of code thrown out in less than 2 weeks after being authored, is on the rise and expected to double in 2024. And the percentage of copy-pasted code, whether it's... I don't think it... The way they're now is analyzing it, they don't know what generated, whether it's a human or an LLM. But the percentage of copy-pasted code is increasing faster than updated, deleted, or moved code. And then the quote is, in this regard, the composition of AI-generated code is similar to a short-term developer that doesn't thoughtfully integrate their work into the broader project.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And that totally lines up with my experience with GitHub Copilot so far. It's been super useful, I think it saved me a lot of time. Do I trust it? Like, trust it? Hell no. It's crazy.
I'm curious about how it's saving you time.
I think it has a drinking problem.
How is it saving you time, though? Is it just auto-completing things for you?
Yeah. Or? Like, it's just... And it's honestly, John, every day that goes on...
You're working on what, though?
Yeah.
When it's saving you time.
Well,
You're working on your little cool little integration project, aren't you?
But when I go into Apex and stuff, it's pretty damn good. I think it's better than Salesforce's.
But you're not really doing
developers.
I mean, the hard stuff you're doing in Apex isn't that hard. You're looping through records most of the time.
No, but you know, with Apex, even worse than languages I prefer to work in, is very verbose. And if it can write this verbose stuff for me. And sometimes if I don't even know how to get started, I'll just write a comment that says, this needs to loop through this and blah, 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 blah. And it'll just do it. But a lot of it's just rote stuff. It's not stuff that's that hard. It's just stuff I would have had to maybe look up some parameter, some method signatures or different things. It'll just autocomplete like, you know, 3 to 6 lines, 10 lines for me. Mm-hmm. And I'll look at it. And I mean, an increasing percentage of the time, I'm like, that is exactly right. Wow.
Can I ask you a moral question?
Sure.
Have you heard the
saying? Because I have no morals.
Have you ever heard the saying, you're paying me for my expertise, not for how fast I am?
Yeah.
How does that play into this?
My expertise is when I look at this thing that just saved me 5 minutes. That I can tell within 5 seconds whether it's right or not.
Fair.
But it is crazy sometimes. And sometimes it thinks that methods exist that don't exist.
No, you just tell the ID to create that method for you.
Just create this method in the Java library, in the you know, core Java runtime library that I'd have no access to. Yeah. That'll work.
Oh, it'll try.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me continue on the same article here. The bottom line they say is that AI code assistants are very good at adding code, but they can also induce AI induced tech debt, which I totally. This is why, at least for now, you still have to have proper, you know. You know what is coming back into play is the debate between developers and engineers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come back to that. Fast code adding is desirable if you're working in isolation on a greenfield problem. That's what these things are good at. They're good at greenfield stuff. In fact, even these things that are like, you can tell it like, hey, create me a, you know, whatever. What's the stupid scenario? Like, did you see this new tool called Devin that they came out of Stealth this week? Okay. It's pretty cool. I don't know if it's LLM based. I really haven't spent much time paying attention to it. But it was kind of shocked people how impressive it was. So they were able to say, tell it, like, give it, you know, like a paragraph instruction on what kind of project to create. And it just goes through it. First of all, tells you its whole plan. And this was I think there's like a 1 minute video. I'll play it later. So let me not spoil that. But it's getting better. It's getting mm-hmm. better. But right now, like the GitHub Copilot types of things, they're good at writing new stuff. They're not going to tell you how to integrate it into your existing code base. It's not going to tell you whether it's a good idea to write this code, whether there's a better way to do it, whether, you know, it's writing dry code, whether it's, you know, cohesive. None of that stuff. Whether it's testable. It doesn't know any of that stuff. It's literally just like spitting out tokens because it just understands tokens. LLMs just understand tokens. What should be the next token? A word, an open bracket, again, the appearance of smart when it does things right, but it often does things wrong and you realize how stupid it is. So the use cases that I use it for is, I think they're kind of limited, but they come up so much during my typical, you know, must sit down and do some coding that it's like, it's super helpful. Like so much so that if I didn't get GitHub Copilot for free, I would absolutely pay for it. Was it 20 bucks, 10 bucks, 20 bucks a month, something like that? Totally worth it. I mean, it saves me. It probably, you know, in terms of value when I'm working for my job, value it's providing to my organization, probably, you know, in the thousands of dollars per month, it's adding in value.
Kind of brings back the practicality of pair programming, doesn't it? In some ways.
You're asking the wrong person. I never got into pair programming. it's good in isolation or greenfield project, but hastily adding code is caustic to the teams expected to maintain it going forward. I like that term, caustic. Caustic is not good. AI is like a brand new credit card here that is going to allow us to accumulate technical debt in ways we were never able to do before.
Oh, I don't believe that.
No, listen again. AI is like a brand new credit card here that is going to allow us to accumulate technical debt in ways we were never able to do before. We're creating technical debt faster than ever. This is not necessarily good.
I think we're creating the same amount of technical debt.
Oh, no, it's more. Yeah, I promise you.
I think technical originates from the things that we don't know. You know, we do our best up front to solve a problem. But what creeps in is the things that we weren't able to anticipate. And that creates the technical debt.
Got to push back on you on that. It concerns me if, as a team, a developer, whatever, that if you don't, you need to ideally realize most of the technical debt you're creating. It's a decision. It's like, well, I have a budget. I'm on a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to do this perfect right now. We're mm-hmm. going to get it done. We're going to ship this feature. It will get value to our organization,
mm-hmm.
but it will need to be refactored, better integrated, whatever at some point. So, sure. But technical debt, the best kind of technical debt is a deliberate technical debt where you've analyzed trade-offs based on.
Oh, I think you're giving way too many products, way too many credit.
Maybe so. And there's also technical debt you don't know you're creating. I'm just saying, ideally,
if you look at how these MVPs work, it's rarely quality code. And a lot of times it's rarely quality engineers. A lot of times just to get it up and running as quickly as possible, you end up either outsourcing some of it or bringing on cheaper talent to just kind of get you there and see how it shakes out. Even when you're implementing, say, let's bring it back. Let's pop the stack to Salesforce. Even when you're bringing it onto Salesforce, a company very rarely understands what's going into their system. They've hired this company. They trust their expertise to build this thing and to implement all their customizations. And it's only after it's implemented and they start using it, they start realizing that we want to make these types of changes. But the decisions that were made back then, either because of our requirements or because of the way they chose to implement it, have created this certain amount of technical debt.
Yeah. And I know that you're talking from a place of experience here. And that's a whole other thing, you know. It's hard when you have multiple different corporate entities that are working on your code base. Uh-oh.
Sorry, my eye for some reason stung with pain.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Getting old, John.
Yeah. Old eyes. Man, it's like something weird. Poked me in the eye, but I have glasses on.
You do. And I'm across the room from you, so it wasn't me.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, continue.
Anyway, I'm just going to continue with some of these quotes. If engineering leaders are making salary decisions based on lines of code changed, then the combination of that plus AI creates incentives ripe for regrettable code being submitted. It's tough to say whether AI tools will be a net positive for software development. He pointed to this article is there. This report, this analysis, they are not gung-ho on AI being that productive for software development. I think I disagree with this, but he pointed to the benefits of using AI to get custom tailored code answers from places such as Find, Phind. Never used it. But he also said that reading bad code is the most willpower draining component of the job for developers.
I actually don't have a negative perspective on it.
On what?
AI okay. Code assisting. I think it's going to be a... No different than the tooling we have in IDEs today.
No, but I disagree. Imagine putting a massively powerful but dangerous power tool in the hands of someone who doesn't know what they're doing with it and saying, hey,
yeah, it's called a text editor and a compiler. That's just that's the age-old story since forever. It's just a different party contributing to it. It's just another tool. I mean, if you think about all the... a tool that writes something for you versus you. How do I say this? In the same way that IDEs have kind of allowed us to kind of focus on the actual requirements and less about like folder structure and import statements and all those kind of things, I think that the AI could participate in that and create productivity for the developer as it tries to kind of do some of this boilerplate stuff for you. And I think that's where its strengths will be. I could be wrong, yeah, no, but I think its strengths in kind of being more aware of the of the system. So like a React specific AI or a Apex specific AI, those I think will be far more valuable than the general purpose AI at making us productive.
Yeah. I think the idea though is that people can with the assistance of AI can generate a lot more code a lot faster. And a lot of that's going to be bad code. And
I can generate code really fast.
No, John, I promise you I can generate code. Jeremy can generate a lot more code faster with AI than without. And I think if Jeremy is not doing a good job of being selective and wise about how that code gets integrated into the code base, then I'm creating a soul-sucking problem for someone else that's going to have to come and fix all this.
Jeremy's essentially outsourcing it to AI land.
I'm using GitHub Copilot.
It's no different than the outsourcing mechanism that we have today.
It is different.
How is it different?
Because it's the same thing. The whole process is completely different. The same process. No, it's not at all, John.
You have someone else write code for you, you as the lead engineer would somehow do a code review and validate it, and then approve it for deployment. That's what it is.
What I'm saying is, in the hands of, an inexperienced person or a person who doesn't have the right incentives.
I got the sediment.
Yeah, that's good for you. who doesn't have the right incentives, they're going to produce a lot of garbage.
Yeah, I agree. I see what you're saying. I think we both agree on the same things. I just think got to do the baton pass.
Yeah.
Pass.
Toss?
Pass.
I'm not tossing that open can of beer to you. Sorry. It's a dark lager, so I don't want that all over that beautiful couch you're sitting on.
Here, that's all I can have.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Just set it down.
Okay.
It's low. It's not as big stout. It's low ABV. It's like 5 or 6%. Okay. I think it's like 5 actually.
Okay. I'm trying to be healthy,
but it's tasty.
No, not really. I'm just really tired.
Anyway. Well, let's go to this thing that took the internet by storm this week. I'm gonna play it.
Hey, I'm Scott from Cognition AI, and today I'm really excited to introduce you to Devin, the first AI software engineer. Let me show you an example of Devin in action. I'm going to ask Devin to benchmark the performance of Llama on a couple different API providers. From now on, Devin is in the driver's seat. First, Devin makes a step-by-step plan of how to tackle the problem. After that, it builds the whole project using all the same tools that a human software engineer would use. Devin has its own command line, its own code editor, and even its own browser. In this case, Devin decides to use the browser to pull up.
Unfortunately, no one can see this.
Pull up API documentation so that it can read up and learn how to plug into each of these APIs. Here, Devin runs into an unexpected error. Devin actually decides to add a debugging print statement. Reruns the code with the debugging print statement, and then uses the error in the logs to figure out how to fix the bug.
So this is not LLM stuff, right? This is more this is beyond LLM stuff.
Oh, it's beyond.
Yeah. Dude, this thing, like,
it wrote a debug statement to the log. It's beyond.
It gave Devin a problem that would have taken
you a week to do that. It's Devin.
Devin? Is that what he said?
You hit the accent, the D. You haven't heard him? He's been saying Devin.
No, I didn't. I didn't notice that. It put together an outline of how it thought it was going to solve the problem.
Oh, that's cool.
It opens up a web browser, a terminal, and all the stuff, and this code editors, and it's doing all this stuff.
Okay.
It runs a test, gets an error, puts debugging statements in, reruns it, uses that output to fix the problem. I mean,
that's not a bad workflow. That's similar to my workflow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Finally, Devin decides to build and deploy a website with full styling as the visualization. You can see the website here.
No, I can't.
All of this is possible today because of the advancements that we've made in both reasoning and long-term planning. It's a really hard problem, and we've only just started, but we're super excited about the progress that we've made so far. In the meantime, if you'd like to try out Devin on your own real-world tasks, send us a request below and we'd be happy to forward it to Devin.
What's this guy's name? Is it Scott Wu?
Hey, I'm Scott from Cognition AI.
Yeah, you know him?
No, I'm just on their website and I noticed he's CEO, but then there's a subtitle, human software engineer. So now we got to clarify that we're the human engineers.
I did see some people that on Twitter commenting that know him to say he's that guy, their CEO, is an amazing badass.
Yeah.
Badass software engineer. Yep. They pulled up it. There's like one of these sites. It's not LeetCoder or one of these, but it's a similar one. Mm-hmm. And he's like got one of the highest ranks on that entire site. And those are hard to get a good rank on.
Well, he's certainly trying to tackle a much harder problem. But I like the approach. I like the fact that it's going to try to, at some point, kind of try to rationalize the solution a little bit before it tries to implement something. Which is kind of what we do as you grow as a developer. You go, when you start out developing, you just want something to work. You just want to code and you want to see something work. But then as you mature, I guess, as a developer, you start to think a little bit more ahead of time, but kind of plan it a little bit more.
Yeah, and let's see, I wanted to... Two opposite responses to this. I thought both were interesting. Here's one. Why is AI never working towards the 3-hour work week and all my needs are met future that Keynes predicted?
Ugh.
That's Maynard Keynes. And instead, always seems to be working towards the getting the effing soup line Oliver Twist future that we're actually heading towards. We could be trying to cure cancers or make tax prep 100% free, but instead... we're trying to aggressively replace one of the few remaining jobs that provides a legit middle-class income, FFS.
It sounds entitled. Ugh.
Okay. An opposite response. This is from John DeGose. Hot take. If Devin can replace you, you're not a software engineer. If you think LLM-based approaches are months away from replacing engineers, you need to update your mental model of AI because it's broke. I think he means your mental model is broke. Devin is a cute trick for raising dollars, but the real work lies ahead.
I think there's...
Can I add one more thing? This is what I wanted to get to. I mentioned earlier. I'm glad I found this. Someone says, I think that'll happen. Some people will be like, what's the difference between an engineer and a developer? Engineer is the clock. Developer is the gear turning the hour hand in the clock. All right. Sorry.
No, I think I still stand fast that I think these AI tools are just that. They're tools. And I think they can augment what we do as humans. I think they can participate in our thought process and our workflows. I don't necessarily see them as replacements. And I know everyone's watched a lot of Terminator movies and things like that, but I just don't see it that way. I don't see any of this that way. I think our needs and what we get satisfaction from as human beings far surpasses anything that an AI could think of.
Do you read Mark Andreessen? Do you follow him on Twitter or anything?
No.
You should. You would like his thinking. Mm. He's like an AI optimist, also a super smart guy. He's one of the guys that runs Andreessen Horowitz. He's like a well, he started out his team invented was it NCSA Mosaic, the Mosaic browser, and then went on to Netscape. They did Netscape.
Okay, that's
with
okay.
With the guy that invented JavaScript, who's doing the Brave browser now. What's his name?
I forget.
Anyway, beer brain. Mm-hmm. Effectively, one beer and my brain doesn't work. It's really true. Turns out alcohol is not good for you. Hey, can we do a quick intermezzo?
What? That's not a word in my vocabulary. What, an intermezzo?
Yeah, hang on.
Hold on.
I got it.
Is this another language?
No, but I got to figure out how to like turn the volume on this. This is Jeff Bezos on Jay Leno in 1999.
Here's the thing I don't understand. The company is worth billions.
Yes.
And every time I pick up the paper, each year it loses more money than it lost the year before. The company's never made a profit.
That's right.
Why?
It seems like a new math, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I mean, it's to someone who doesn't know anything about this, it's amazing. You know, we lost $12 million last year and we're doing great.
There are a whole series of Doonesbury cartoons about this. This is not a new phenomenon. We are a famously unprofitable company,
right.
And we are investing in the future. It's not, which isn't unusual. Companies have done this before. What's a little surprising about Amazon.com is the scale to which we're doing it. We're doing it in a big way.
I see.
We're losing money faster than anyone's ever lost money before. But you know what? That bro won, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He won. Except that whole divorce thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was my little intermezzo. Did you look that up, that word, John?
I did.
Yeah. What's the definition? Am I using it correctly?
It's a music term, apparently.
Yeah.
In the most general sense, is a composition which fits between other musical or dramatic entities, such as acts or plays.
Okay. I think that was a sufficient use of it.
Yeah. I learned a new word.
Okay. Here's another fun. While we're on this, all these topics here, I gotta again figure out
I want to say,
here we go. This is the CEO of NVIDIA.
I want to say something, and it's going to sound completely opposite of what people feel. Over the course of the last 10 years, 15 years, almost everybody who sits on a stage like this would tell you it is vital that your children learn computer science. Everybody should learn how to program. And in fact, it's almost exactly the opposite. It is our job to create computing technology such that nobody has to program.
Well, let's go and hang up the gloves, John. We're done.
That's it. It's over.
Yep.
We're in the matrix now.
I know. What am I going to do?
We're just batteries.
What am I going to do?
We're just going to be in the pod and the battery. Remember, ignorance is bliss.
I don't know. Maybe I'm okay with that at this point. John looks at me like, are you serious? All right. He was not done.
I'm more optimistic.
Yeah. I know you are.
And that the programming language is human. Everybody in the world.
Oh, we're human programmers now, John.
That's what I just said.
Is now a programmer. This is the miracle of artificial intelligence.
You're a programmer.
It's the people that understand.
It's the OPA model of programming.
Yeah. How to solve a domain problem in digital biology or in education of young people or in manufacturing or in farming. Those people who understand domain expertise now can utilize technology that is readily available to you. You now have a computer that will do what you tell it to do. It is vital that we upskill everyone. And
oh, so 2 seconds ago, you're telling me to learn to code. Now you're telling me that's dead and now I need to upskill again. What am I learning to do next? What's next? I love the platitudes. What's next?
Become a domain expert.
Has this guy ever implemented anything at any company?
And the upskilling process.
Well, yeah, he started out as a janitor. Now he's the CEO of do they now have the biggest market cap in the world? I think they just passed Apple. Huge. It's insane.
I'm talking about implementing business requirements, internal business politics that all affects a project.
Yeah.
It seems really naive to think that these toolings are going to solve all those problems, that companies are going to trust someone to sit there and just talk to the computer and tell it what to do.
Well, if there's one thing I've learned over my career, it's that if it's good enough, no one gives a crap, John.
In some companies, yes. In some companies, I think they're a little bit more...
And sometimes it's not good enough, and they just sweep it under the rug anyway.
I'm a cynic, but I'm not that cynical.
I'm not saying that, like, you know, I don't know. Surely there's going to be, we've already seen a culling of jobs.
Salesforce can bring back Sassy, right? The no software mascot?
Well, I think Sassy has been put out to pasture.
Yeah, but Sassy can make a comeback. I mean, if everything is AI, there's no reason for Sassy. I mean, there's every reason to have Sassy and not Cody.
Did you know I just realized that Sassy could be a recursive acronym? Sassy as a service? Is that a recursive acronym? Or am I just, have I had too much beer? Maybe it's not. Anyway, I want to get back to this. So this video was posted by, do you know this guy, Dara Obasanjo? Does he still work at Microsoft?
I don't know where he works. Name dropping, by the way. I don't know these people.
I don't even follow him anymore because he kind of annoys me sometimes, although he's really smart. 150,000 followers on Twitter. But I think he's a PM now for Microsoft on some big product. But he's an engineer type. And he's always been one of these guys with HSOs. You know what an HSO is, John?
No.
Hot sports opinion. Come on, man.
Nope.
Really? You don't listen to sports talk radio? I don't either, but.
Nope.
Yeah, he's got HSOs on everything. And anyway, so he says, Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, argues that we should stop saying kids should learn to code. He argues the rise of AI means we can replace programming languages with human language prompts, thus enabling everyone to be a programmer. AI will kill coding, period.
Again, that's really disingenuous.
He says, I have two minds here. The way capitalism works means the fact that programmers are highly paid is a bug corporations will try to fix with automation, even if the end result is lower quality. That is what I just said. Literally what I just said. Sweeping it under the rug. It's okay. On the other hand, imagine the possibilities if you don't need to know React to make apps. It's going to make everyone's life better, right? Everything will be cheaper.
That's naive on the surface. Sorry. Absolutely naive.
Okay.
How many low-code platforms have been out there and said you could build whatever you want? How many? Salesforce said it. You could build Salesforce on Salesforce. Go ahead and try. Go ahead and try.
I wish I had a clip of that. We have to go back and find that.
Yeah.
It was Dreamforce, what, 12 years ago, something like that?
These idiots seem to distill software and applications into this thing that just pops up out of nowhere. They just plant a seed, it grows, and you pluck it, and you stick it on the store. That's not how it works.
So I have a... I'm glad you mentioned the low-code thing, because there's a lot of talk... Why is this not working? My links aren't working. What in the world? All right. This one is about how generative AI will change low-code development. I'm just going to go through and cherry-pick some quotes here. So GitHub found that 88% of developers reported immediate product... hang on, what are we talking about here? Code generators, making significant impact. Okay, again, this is GitHub, right? Mm-hmm. Microsoft, who makes Copilot and all this stuff. GitHub found that 88% of developers reported improved productivity, 74% focused on more satisfying work, and over 80%, 87% said they completed tasks faster using GitHub Copilot.
Hmm.
Okay. I mean, those numbers seem pretty close to me. Coding will become the first almost entirely automated, and UX designers will become the de facto front-end developer, says David Brooks, senior VP and lead evangelist at Copado.
That seems upside down.
Do you know what Copado is?
I've heard of it.
They're one of the, 800, we're going to try to make your deployments on Salesforce less painless.
Yeah.
Instead of graphic tools like Figma to mock up UI, they will work with Gen AI tools to generate working UI prototypes in the company's framework of choice, which is true. You know what's going to be cool is, we've in the past month or so, we've had this flurry of these things that can create. You give it a text prompt or maybe a paragraph. Say, create me a video scene of a couple walking along the beach and there's birds and blah, 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 whatever. And it creates like actually a pretty badass video. Mm-hmm. Now, what the problem with this right now is it doesn't understand the video and it's just giving you raw video. But what's cool is when it actually gives you like an Adobe, what's their video product called? Whatever.
Yeah, I forgot.
When it gives you the Adobe project with all the assets and everything, and you can go in and then just like edit it.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be cool.
I think you can do a lot of that today.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, with illustrations and stuff and just images, it's already there, basically, I think.
No, I think there's some video tools already that do that, too, in Adobe.
Well, and Adobe's getting beat up big time by the stock market because they're perceived as being behind on all this. Now, what's weird is they have a bunch of AI stuff. They've done a bunch of AI stuff, but
it's because they're not the new fancy startup who's claiming that they're pooping gold.
So this is not a financial show and I'm not certified on anything and don't take advice from me, but I think Adobe's down right now. This is a good buying opportunity if you believe in Adobe's ability to really do cool stuff, AI stuff with the video video and illustration and photo and all that stuff. Good opportunity. All right.
I would agree with that, but I think I don't agree with the statement that it's going to replace people in those areas.
I mean, they're not replacing them. We're just going to redeploy them to do more productive things, John.
Nope.
Yeah.
We'll still need people.
Oh, they'll do more higher value added, higher order things.
Nope.
They'll get to go to the board. They'll get to sit on the board meetings, you know, and stuff.
It higher, might be higher that value. Way. It might be that way for a year or so until they learn their lesson and they'll be bringing people back into it.
I got one of these for you too. When you finish that.
Oh, okay.
It's actually really, it's all day IPA, like 4% or whatever.
It's synonymous with full automation in manufacturing industries or mass production things. Sure, those things give you cheaper products and faster products, but there's still a market out there for artisanal creations.
People still have jobs,
right?
Well, and also people still have jobs.
Things. Yeah.
It's doing other stuff.
I don't buy into this thing that AI is going to replace everybody. I don't know why they're fear. What benefit do they have at fear-mongering?
Because people...
content. That's what it is.
Clickbait.
It's content.
It's content. It's clickbait.
These are freaking content influencer creators that want to be famous
on TikTok. Of course.
They do nothing for society.
All right, let me continue on this so we don't have let's time check. Time check. Okay, we're at an hour. What is the maximum acceptable time for an episode length?
Probably 1:30.
1:30?
Yeah. Probably.
You still haven't given me access to Apple or whatever it is so I can see get this data. I don't have access to it.
What data?
Apple will give you data on all that. Like when people listen, when they drop off, all that kind of stuff. And I asked you for access to the account and you wouldn't give it to me. You ignore me.
Oh, because it's my account. It's my Apple account.
No, it's the podcaster.
No, I know. I had to sign up for the podcast using my Apple account. That's the only way to do it. There's no like creating a third party shared account. Mm-hmm. It's the way Apple did it.
You don't want me to see your questionable purchases?
I want you to see my my music history. Might see some T-Swift in there. Maybe
I have some CDs of your music history, John.
I'm still working on some new stuff. I don't want to share it, though, now that you said that.
Okay, I'm continuing with this. Low-code is dying in the enterprise, and AI will kill it. AI will kill low-code. This is according to Anand Kulkarni.
I think it actually might make low-code better.
Crobotics. I think it might, too. Well, and a lot of people feel that way. He says, the big question is, why would you want to use low-code when you can use AI to create full code with the same effort?
Good question. That's not the point.
Well, but I think the presumption there is that full code leaves the power with you to do powerful things that low code, you know, doesn't have the good escape hatches, can't stay dry, all the things we talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Beckley, CEO, co-founder and CTO of Appian, sees things differently. No, code generators are part of the problem. AI copilots make it easy to create lots of apps, which only increases the need for a low-code platform to connect and govern them all to ensure you aren't creating data silos and security issues. Oh, you heard it here first, John. Low-code platforms ensure that you don't create data silos and security issues. I did not know that. I didn't know that. I've learned something. I think we've all learned something from this episode today. Yeah. Whoever's made it this far in the episode. How will Gen AI drive developer skill sets? Well, according to Dinesh Varahandrahan, Chief Product Officer of Kissflow, Kissflow says that coding will shift from traditional syntax to contextual awareness and intelligent constructs, empowering businesses, users to create applications with little programming skills. That was Gen AI right there, that statement.
That was
just garbage words.
It was garbage.
That was word salad. If developers coding less, then what other skills become important? Okay, here's someone. Boom. Ed Makowski, Chief Product and Technology Officer at Boomi. All of his names. We've run out of names for companies, John. We've run out
Boomi,
of
Boomi. Isn't that the data migration platform?
Yeah, something
like that. Isn't it like owned by Dell, or did they get sold out?
Oh, it was Dell. Or Dell bought them. I don't know if they got spun out again. Yeah. I mean, Dell loves to buy and sell things, and also sell and buy themselves back over and over again. As long as you make money going both all ways, it's all good, right? I mean, that's the way to do it. Who bought their company back for a dollar? They sold it for a ton and bought it back for a dollar. Who was that? I was trying to tell someone that story the other day. I couldn't think of who it was. Anyway. All right. The Boomi guy says, skill sets will evolve to encompass a blend of traditional coding expertise along with proficiency in utilizing low and no code platforms, understanding how to integrate AI technologies, and effectively collaborating in teams using those tools. The combination of low code alongside copilots will allow developers to enhance their skills and focus on supporting business outcomes rather than spending the bulk of their time learning different coding languages. Yeah, that's what software engineers do. We just spend all of our time learning different coding languages. This guy is a poser. He's not even using the right words for things.
Mm-hmm.
What a dumb. Armand Petrosian, CEO of Coalesce, adds that there will be a greater emphasis on analytical thinking, problem solving, and design thinking, with less of a burden on the technical barrier of solving these types of issues. Okay, I kind of agree with the spirit of that. But will software quality improve or get worse? As more people with different skill sets leverage AI assistance to build and enhance software, should we expect software quality and end-user experiences to improve or worsen? A related question is whether we will see defects released to production, mounting technical debt, and greater security vulnerabilities as AI enables more people to release more code.
Very good, naive question.
I think that's a good question.
It's going to happen. What?
People are going to release more and crappier code.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. AI assistance will likely help developer teams shift left. Oh, I'm so sick of that phrase.
I'm shifting left right now.
By bridging the gaps between writing requirements and generating development artifacts. Quote, Gen AI also has the opportunity to perform most of the tasks directly from a well-written user story. Instead of using the custom object/field, you can tell where this world this guy's from. Mm-hmm. Instead of using the custom object and custom field tools, a copilot can create the metadata required and insert it directly into the platform, says Brooks of Copado. I feel like he hasn't actually worked on the Salesforce platform.
No. Just gets paid to sit there and
try to get that into production. Then I'll be impressed. But back to today's reality,
we need a deployment AI.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, that's what we need. Yeah. Salesforce, get on that.
Yeah. Well, we can't tell Parker to get on it because he doesn't work at Salesforce anymore. He works at Slack.
Yeah.
Who's who can work on that?
Just we could tell Slack to deploy our stuff.
You get a winner right there. Where's my?
We don't have the bell no more. It's somewhere.
There's the bell.
Yeah,
I know. I saw it earlier. I'm like, I haven't used this bell in forever. I'm like, oh, they're just sitting. It's just behind my monitor, so I never see it. But back to today's reality, where AI generated code doesn't mean defectless, security clear, cost free, or humanless code. Quote: There is a stronger need for a qualified human to verify the output of Gen AI, whether that's writing lines of code or generating no code workflows. Anyway, lots of opinions,
they
John.
Have stars in their eyes.
Yeah, lots of opinions.
They have stars in their eyes, and they're from naive perspectives.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. This is probably not super applicable to our show and our community here, but Apple has released a new, what would you call it, a configuration language? Pickle. Have you heard of it? PKL. Pickle. Mm-hmm. What did I say it was? Anyway, it's a configuration. Configuration as code. So it's like the stuff you would use, maybe YAML or properties files or, heaven forbid, XML for. Sorry, I vomited a little bit when I said XML. it's an alternative to that. It's pretty cool. Now, I will say there are there's lots of similar things out there. And for the first one that I've thought of, it's popular, kind of, I guess, in the Java space a little bit. Maybe it's not Java. It's not Java, actually. I'm trying to think of the main language it's implemented. I think it might be Go or something. But JSON it, which is a JSON-looking language.
I think I've heard
of
that.
But really, it's you build your templates in JSON, and then you know, when you execute the templates, because your templates, your config templates are just that, they're templates. And, you know, and when you're running a big stack of stuff or, you know, lots of Kubernetes clusters and stuff, like, you don't want to hand code every config file out there. You want to have templates and then be able to apply, you know, if you've got a whole different set of environments that kind of you can use the same template, then you just apply whatever the data is, run it against the template, and it spits out configuration. I mean, there's a lot of these things that do that. But Pickle looks pretty cool if you have this problem. I'm trying to see if there was a good description of it. It's good for generating static configurations, is what they say here. Are you using a tool, service, or application that's configured with JSON, YAML, or any other static configuration format? By generating this configuration with Pickle, you can reduce the verbosity, increase the maintainability through reuse, templating, and abstraction. So it has types. It has like constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool. Anyway, anyone who's kind of in that space, I would recommend taking a look. I might play with it at some point. I don't have a burning need for it, but it's weird. I mean, Apple, they, I know. Sorry, it's loud in here. Their first IDE plugin is, it's not Xcode. It's not VS Code. It's IntelliJ. They said they're working on doing a what's the language API, the language server model or whatever the hell it's called that VS Code and other things use for a. So if you want VS Code to have like support for your language, you implement the LSM. LSM, is that what it is? LSM language server. And then VS Code can just, you know, now support your language basically. So they're working on that, but they don't have it yet. But they did implement first class IntelliJ support. Anyway, what else do I have, John? What else do you have? You know, you had some other stuff you want to talk about.
I did, but I'm wondering about time.
Yeah, we're a little over an hour. There was a big article.
Is this floor shaking?
There might be. It was a big article. It seemed sketchy to me, so I didn't want to spend too much time on it. But it's on this website called Dark Reading, which is, I guess, is some news thing about security and stuff. Probably like on the dark web or black hat stuff or whatever. But it's all
going to be a new dark web, because for some reason everyone's talking about dark web these days.
But it's all about how misconfigured Salesforce apps are exposing people's corporate data.
Yeah, it's all those low codes.
It's crazy because, I mean, I will say, you know, Salesforce does an amazingly good job at making it really hard to do dumb stuff security-wise, for the most part.
Yeah, so it makes it really hard for us developers to get stuff
well,
done.
That's the price of security. It makes stuff more difficult. Yeah. That's just the price of security. But whether it's, you know, the low code or the pro code, can't forget about the pro code. You know, I think Salesforce does a pretty good job of, like, you have to really, it seems like to me, almost go out of your way sometimes to do, to create security problems for yourself. But people do. And I see it.
You don't have to go out of your way.
Okay.
You can. I think that's part of the problem, is that when things are really, when you can restrict things really well, there's usually one or two toggles that can really expose things.
And
if you don't have really good documentation on, which I think Salesforce lacks in this area, is really good documentation on what security is being applied and how to effectively override that security in what specific scenario. For instance, if you have an account that's restricted from the API, or maybe it can only use API if it's got a connected app. Well, you can assign it a profile that says any API client, in which case it'll open it up to anything that wants to access that account. So there are toggles everywhere here and there that you might think, oh, that fixes my problem. I can now access Salesforce where I couldn't before.
I would need to have a specific example, because I feel like Salesforce makes it kind of difficult to do the wrong thing with security.
No, that's a perfect example of an easy toggle.
So what was it again? If your system
is locked down and you have maybe an API, an account, maybe you're trying to connect your Pardot to Salesforce and you need an account to do that.
But wait, those are from the same company. They're both on the Salesforce One, Einstein One, Lightning One platform, John.
I also said Pardot, and it's not Pardot anymore.
No, what is it? Some 8-word thing now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Marketing Cloud something.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, they're really extending that Marketing Cloud brand. It's called brand extension, and you can go too far with it. FYI, I'm not sure who needs to hear this, but
anyway. So let's say you have an external tool you want to integrate with Salesforce. You need to give it an account to access Salesforce. The secure way to do that would be to create a connected app and give it the permissions that you want that user account to be able to access from the API, knowing that it's going to come in from externally, and it's going to have. You don't want it to have expiring tokens. You don't want someone to have to go into that other tool and log in. You want it to just log in once. You want to have it connect as it needs to. Okay. That's a normal flow that we set up all the time.
Okay.
Now, you could bypass the need to set up that connected app and just say that this account can be called from any API. So any API call using this account can access anything. And it's in the system settings, and you can set that up with one checkbox.
Wait, a user account?
Yeah.
Just like what it's called, you just give it administrator access? Or?
Well, that's another easy toggle, okay. Is giving it administrator access. But if you were to, let's use the new integration only API accounts, for an example. You would set that up, you would give it to the application that you're trying to integrate with Salesforce and let it connect. The proper way to do it would be to set up your permission sets, your permission sets, because you're not going to use profiles anymore. Permission sets with all the only permissions that it needs to have access to. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
That first step of security is you could give it system admin access because you're like, well, this I need to integrate. I need this thing to see everything.
That's the easy thing, right?
That's the easy thing.
Yep.
So that's one security failure. One security failure. Two is if you allow it to access your data from anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, what is that setting?
That's the any API client setting on system settings for that permission set or profile.
Any API client?
Yeah.
That's called any API client?
Something like that. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a setting that just opens it up for any client. And that's fine.
Okay.
If you know what you're doing. Because it still needs to have credentials and it still needs to create refresh tokens and all that kind of stuff. But you really want it to be restricted to the connected app so that you kind of know and you have named accounts and you know exactly what it's going to be accessing and you have named permissions and you have named protocols and all those kind of things. So it's just an example of how you can easily break free of that.
Yeah, you can. It's like you have to, I mean, obviously you can do dumb stuff.
Did I go overkill with that example?
I don't know. Unfortunately, I couldn't follow it because I don't know what setting you're talking about. Oh. And I feel like in general, Salesforce makes it hard to do the wrong thing. You can. Obviously, you can. When it happens.
Well, even if you simplify it to just giving it the wrong profile.
Hey, you just, I see people do this. Like they'll create a site, expose stuff on it, and give it an administrator thing. I mean, it's you can do the wrong thing. It's not.
Salesforce did make that harder with the guest user access being far more restricted.
Salesforce has good defaults on these things.
Sure. And it does make doing certain things much harder, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you didn't have any ability to do this stuff, then the platform would be useless.
Right.
That's why you still need a few smart people left at the end of the day to make sure that you're not doing dumb stuff.
Yeah, I don't like that segment. I feel like it created too many straw men. It comes from experience. Okay. It really does, but...
I will delete that segment.
I didn't do a good job at explaining myself. It might be the beer.
It didn't happen. That segment did not happen.
Well, let me ask you this question, since we're trying to get to some of my topics and we're going to finish up here soon. And again, this is one I need you to lean into a little bit and tell me your experience, because someone had come to me with a project for data deduplication in our system. And unfortunately, I think they're oversimplifying the problem, because their first approach is to just run a Python script that's going to go through and look through, say, our accounts and for certain fields do some Levenstein distance calculations on it and come up with a ratio and come up with a list of things.
Okay.
And I think that's a waste of time, to be honest, because I don't see data deduplication as simply, I don't ever want to see this text again in another record.
Because
that's not how specifically accounts and contacts work.
It's not how identity works.
Right.
Things can have the same name. It's okay.
Things can have the same name. Yep. There could be valid reasons for things to have the same name. Yep. And the rule set of combination of name, phone number, email, domain, all those kind of things need to be factored in. But they can't. It's not something as simple as setting up a matrix of ratios or thresholds that say that if the account name is 90% and the phone is 80% and this and that. It's just... It's a naive approach to that problem, having done data deduplication before.
Yeah. That's a hard problem. I hate the deduplication problem.
It is a hard problem. And I was just kind of curious about your approach to it, because I
don't have an approach that I avoid. Anytime there's like, we need you to help me, I'm just like, let me get you someone who can help you with that, because I don't like doing it.
Well, I've done several of them, but I've always stressed the importance of the business being involved in the decision making for what gets merged, or even just what the rules are, because I need to understand what is a valid duplicate in the system.
Yeah.
or you know, how is this data used? Because I need to inform, or even how did a duplicate get created in the first place?
Yeah.
Because that can inform how you target those records.
Yep.
You know, maybe some campaign went out and it generated all these duplicates. Well, that gives me something to go on. I can target that campaign. I can see what was created as part of that campaign. And I can limit my data set for merging and do some tooling on that. I just wondered if I was kind of being mean because I kept pushing back on that exercise of running that Python script, even though it would be easy. I mean, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Well,
but it's relatively simple.
I think you're thinking along the right way, and I appreciate that. I think the and this is my challenge too. It's the just the it is the human side of these kind of problems. You almost ideally take like a Socratic approach where you start asking them questions.
Mm-hmm.
The answers they'll give you poke holes in what their strategy is and make your points for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't interacting with the business. I was interacting with a PM who, for some reason, wanted to get a head start on this data duplication thing that was originating from our business analytics team.
PMs have their own incentives.
PMs who, and this originated from our business analytics team. And I'm like,
It's crazy how much project management's incentives can be separated from the business's incentives.
Yeah.
Got to watch out for that.
Yeah. The interesting part is we're actually working on solving one part of the system that was generating duplicates. And that's actually part of the big release next week. So I was curious, I was like, why are you so hyper-focused on finding these duplicates and cleaning up the data? Because we've got tooling coming to let the users start to back out those duplicates. We're giving them tooling to do proper merging. Cause it's Salesforce merging is great if you just have a very simple structure, but when you have like related records and things that the system isn't aware of, that non-standard objects, you have to account for that in the merge.
And then how do you merge those data sets? Like, are some of those duplicates too? It's very, very tricky. This is why I'm like, anytime I hear the word duplicates or duplication, I'm just like, you know what? Can you excuse me? I got to go to the bathroom and I never come back. Where'd Jeremy go? I don't know. He must've been really sick or something.
Yeah, Taco Bell for lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. How are we on time? I got more.
I keep going.
All right, here's my next one.
People can listen to us in 2X if they need to.
Here's this one. More classes, more problems. How does this impact testing? So I used to be on the less classes mode, where I would try to cram as much as I can into a class with subclasses and things like that. And now...
But we have to pause and say, why have we had that pressure to have fewer classes?
Because we just didn't have namespaces.
We don't have namespaces.
Also, just everything is in a single directory. All your classes are in the classes folder.
I know. Yep. And you're like, well, let's come up with really interesting naming conventions so that things at least sort in the right order.
Yeah.
But at least now we have the thing where you can put stuff in different directories.
No,
on the disk. I know. It's got its own problems.
So I've been leaning towards kind of smaller, which is what you should have. You should have smaller classes with maybe one or two functions that do one or two things. And you're testing, then you can do proper unit testing because then you can just test those very granular little pieces. And then you could have one, you know, final integration test that maybe does the validation of what happens if you start it here and it ends up here. What's in the database now? I've moved to that perspective, but without that organization technique of even just putting things in folders without the system trying to delete my stuff and recreate it. Is it denormalized? Is that the right way to say it?
I don't know. Are we talking about data?
Well, you remember I told you I had this lab project. You know what happened to my lab project as of like 2 days ago?
No.
I put everything back into the single class folder.
Mm.
I had it all broken up into modules.
You gave up.
I gave up. I absolutely gave up and put it all back into the happy soup path.
You did
single class file.
You did
folder.
You did the same thing that everyone who's tried to use unlock packages to decouple their org has done.
Yeah. Well, I was considering that. I was like, okay, maybe I can't use folders. That's not working out. Maybe I can do a bunch of unlock packages for each one of these modules. I didn't get very far in that either.
Yeah.
It's It's not fun. It's sad. I want to be organized. I want things to be clean. Yeah. And I even had like this great thought. I was like,
you know why?
Okay, I'm going to have this folder. It's going to have a README file so that anybody who wants to use this framework, it's in its own folder. It's got a README file. It'll link you to the Confluence page for all the details on the usage.
Oh, READMEs and Confluences. And oh my gosh. Awesome.
Oh my.
I know exactly.
No, we use Confluence a lot. We do a good job of documenting. I will say that as a company, we do a pretty good job at documenting our stuff. Like when I got hired, I was nervous when they told me to go read these docs. I read the docs and they were pretty good.
That's good. Documentation is very hard because first of all, it's hard to write documentation,
yeah.
Especially if you're writing documentation for something you built, you have to be a really empathetic person to be good at that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really understand who your potential audiences are. And you have to try to just delete out your knowledge that you have of this thing and pretend like you have no knowledge of it.
Yeah.
The other big challenge to documentation is that assuming you don't have a dead system, that documentation is going to become out of date. And and maybe you're not working on this part anymore. You're not at the company anymore. Do people know to update that documentation? And so often, as with code, this is, you know, I feel the same way about documentation I do with code comments. Like, just enough and only for the right reasons and no more, because it can become more negative than a positive at some point.
And that's what I was going to say about the documentation. It doesn't, there is detailed documentation like that was written when the project or a feature was trying to be implemented. But at the very least, there's a higher level document that kind of describes what the intent was, the intended flow of it is. Yeah. And that's what was important to me. Yeah. And on top of that,
the why. Yeah, that's good.
They had links to the WebEx sessions. So I could actually and listen and watch the actual meeting that they had on that.
If you really hate yourself, you can go listen to the WebEx sessions. Yes.
Yeah, sure. Oh, I 2X those things.
Yeah.
It helped. In some aspects, I could hear why they made the decisions they made. And that helped me a lot understand the system.
Can we not just pause for a moment and thank the internet gods? That we mostly now on all kind of video playing platforms out there have a playback speed option.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Especially for this podcast. If you're not 2X in this sucker, here.
I go back and forth.
I can't do tech 2X, to be honest. I can only do 1.5X.
I go back and forth. There's some things I like to listen just at 1X and some things I'll bump up a little bit. It also depends on how much a podcast debt I have.
Yeah. It is tough to get used to at first, but you get used to it and it becomes natural.
Yeah.
If anyone's tried it and thought, "Oh, I can't do it." Just give it a good hour. You'll get it.
Well, John, I don't actually know a good way to find this out.
Mhm.
But I don't see that we've had anyone streaming sats or boosting us. But maybe they have. And honestly, if you have, shoot me a note in our Slack, of course, and let me know, because I just want to know.
Oh.
But no, I did set us up for, you know, we're set up with value for value.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got your Lightning wallet and you've got one of the, you know, Castomatic or Podverse or Fountain, any of these apps that support these podcast apps that support
crypto,
that support the features of supporting podcasts with value to value, then you can support this podcast by streaming.
So poor.
It's funny because when I got into this, it's literally just like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got set up, I got Castomatic. Well, I've had Castomatic for a while. But one of the things I was interested in, watch your, no open way. Your stuff there. You're getting a little handsy with your mic.
Oh, I've been touching it all episode.
Oh, God. continuing on. I just like a month ago, I got set up finally. I used Albi because that's what Castomatic support. It's easy to get some of the Albi. So I created a Lightning wallet with getalbi.com and was able to send some of my Bitcoin to it. And then I got set up with Castomatic. And now I stream 50 sats an hour to podcasts when I listen to them. And when I started doing this a month ago, that was about $1.30 an hour. And it got up to like $2.50 an hour because Bitcoin has shot up so much in the past months. I'm like, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I'm like, I think I donated like, you know, a lot of money to podcasts last month. I need to reevaluate my sat streaming. Cause I'm also boosting a lot because what's cool is if you're, there's a lot of these podcasters that support this, like, you'll boost them and then they'll like you'll boost in like, you know, like say 10,000, 20,000 sats, which is like, I don't know, $6 or $10 or something. They'll boost you back 1,000 sats and just saying thank you. Or that, I guess they boost you back. I don't know, but I don't know if it's considered a boost or not. There's actually like, so in the podcasting 2.0, like their namespace in the, that's an add on to RSS or whatever that they've created. The actual thing, I think it's called a boostagram. So the idea is like you can send in an amount of Satoshis, which are just fractions of a Bitcoin, with a message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually like a spec. There's a spec for that. This part of the podcasting 2.0, you know, namespace. I think this is very cool, and I encourage anyone to actually go to newpodcastapps.com or modernpodcastapps.com or apparently just podcastapps.com. You get all these, which is what's weird is they're all a little different, but they're all like a list of the, you know, these modern, they're actually modern podcast apps that support all this stuff.
What do I use? Custom-matic? I think that supports it.
Yeah, so you can go get an Albi wallet. They support Albi, so you just plug, you set it up, you connect it to your Albi wallet.
I've been getting spammed.
On what?
Political spamming.
Oh, God, it's bad. So bad.
Yeah. It's the election year.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know how they're making it through.
I don't either. I mean, well, it's, they have the ways. They're using Marketing Cloud. Or whatever. Marketing Cloud Engagement or Marketing Cloud. Blah, blah, blah. I don't even know. Interaction Studio. I don't even. What are these? What are these things, John?
I don't know. Did I tell you my blog got a credit card?
It got a what?
It got a credit card offer today. I was like,
your blog did.
Yeah.
What, like, Iterative Logic? Yes. You got a credit card? Okay. Can you apply, please? Because I want Iterative Logic to get a credit card.
I was like, what is this? I've never used that name as a company name anywhere that I can think of. Or they just crawl websites and say, this must be a company. I'm going to send it a credit card offer.
Is it iterativelogic.com? Does it still exist, John?
It still exists. I keep it up.
What's taking a while to DNS?
Oh, don't tell me that.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's not. Oh, here it is. Oh, you have a nice photo.
Well,
here.
Because I was going to read
platform developer stories and experiments. And here's
I was going to revive it. I was going to revive it, but I haven't had time.
I'm on the section called latest, and the latest is from May 9th, 2015.
Shut up.
Using invocable methods with Squid.
Yeah, shut up. I was going to revive it. I had this whole plan to revive it, and I still kind of want to, but the reality is my time. I don't know if I have the time. But I have lots of things I want to write about.
Oops. Sorry.
Squid. I have lots of things I want to write about that don't make it onto this podcast.
Well, let's get her done, John.
Actually, I was going to change the name too.
And so, like, recursive logic, what would it be?
I'm not going to say okay. until I actually have the domain, but I'm not going to jinx myself. I just don't
have
the time.
Are we back to having your own running your own blog on your own domain is the hot thing to do? I think that's been, I mean, for true nerds out there, that's the way to do it, right?
On my own?
I mean, on your own domain, your own domain,
mm-hmm.
and like your own, you're hosting it yourself, and like you're not dependent on any of these networks or mediums or Twitters or any of this kind of stuff, right?
The nerd side of me wants to do that, but I barely have enough time to write, much less maintain a site and write a site from scratch.
Well, what kind of nerd are you? Give me your nerd card right now, John. Hand it over. Yeah. John just handed me his nerd card.
I'm still using the Ghost platform.
Ghost is cool. Yeah. Last time I played with those things, the static site generation. Yeah.
Which is why, I don't know why it took so long. Maybe because no one goes to it anymore. It's not cached anymore.
Well, I think it's just indexed. I think it had to like wake up like those DNS paths. No one had been
ghost. Like, what? I thought that thing was dead. That thing should be a ghost.
Exactly. What did I want to? Anyway, I just wanted to thank everyone for coming to the meetup at Trailhead DX. That was cool. I mean, we had.
Did you find my sticker? I have a sticker in that place.
Temptress, but not Temptress. So. Tempest.
Yeah.
Well, there are two more stickers.
Okay.
I wonder where yours was.
There's a back wall in the corner. So you have the bar, and then I think the bathrooms go back there.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And there's that one seat on that corner, and it's right there on that wall, or should be.
So somebody put one on a big pole in the main dining area, and then I put one in the bathroom.
Nice. Yeah. Urinal?
It was just like it's San Francisco, so everything's
Target.
Unisex, you know.
You know, urinal Target.
No, there was no urinal, it was just a toilet.
Ew. Yeah. Oh, that's right, that's San Francisco.
Yeah. I do think, I feel like in the unisex bathrooms, they should at least still have urinals so the women don't have to sit and the guys pee-pee, because guys pee-pee everywhere. I don't, but a lot of guys do, especially if they're consuming a lot of beverages.
The guys should just be sitting too.
Well, that would be bathroom equality, but I'm not sure we're there yet. is that a show title? I'm on the list just in case. Because I'm sure you will have a voluminous list of title candidates, as you always do,
John. I have two.
Oh, you do? That is two times more than you ever have.
The model has to be remodeled, and
that's
the model
stupid. That's 1,000% more than you ever have.
And it's the model stupid. Those are my two.
Okay.
I have two. I was trying to listen for more, than the beer kicked in.
Yeah.
I was done.
Well, I'm proud of you for getting two. That's two more than you ever get, so.
I just wanted a little praise.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to give some extra preferential treatment to your title, since you've, you know, we want to keep you motivated, so you keep coming up with title candidates. I don't want to discourage your efforts. All right, John. Well, you know, one thing we didn't get to, I don't know, this is probably not, I don't know if this is a huge deal, but I think it's kind of a big deal. The EU passed an AI act, which I think everyone should kind of go read, probably. I'll put it in the show notes.
Is it plug into GDPR?
It actually has some decent stuff, but I mean, it's also like, oh, here we go. Government's trying to do regulate tech stuff, which always is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I always think of Stefan Chandler Garcia, when I think of these things, because he was the GDPR, you know, guru when they did all that. So I wonder if he's keeping up this too. Yeah. I mean, he's in a different role now, so probably not, but anyway. All right. Well, yeah. Thanks everyone for coming. That was, I feel like TDX is pretty good. Shout out to the TDX team. I think they did a really good job this year overall. I even had a lunch one of the days and it was really good. Took it back to my hotel room and ate it.
Like a conference sponsored
lunch? Yeah, I had a conference lunch. I usually just go to my secret lunch place. I'm not going to tell, because I don't want to ever go into it, because it's already crowded enough.
Yeah.
All the locals know about it. But I got a conference lunch one day, took it to my room and ate it.
Have I been to that secret place?
No, you haven't. Oh. I don't think you have. Oh. Maybe you have. I don't think so. I don't think I even knew about it last time.
Okay.
You know, you were
last time we were together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Yeah, that's it, I guess. John, anything else?
Nope.
How are we doing on time here? Yeah, we're hour 45.
See?
Maybe an hour 40. I don't know when I started. I don't know when I hit the record button, but it's all right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And, we have a Slack. If you're not in it, you need to go get it in our Slack, because it's how would you describe our Slack, John?
It's a cool, hip, and happening place.
Yeah, it's hip and happening. It's it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of like support, tech support, and emotional support, and funny stuff, and we're all just trying to get along in this crazy world. And it's a community of like minded, but also diverse minded people, I would say. And if that makes any sense, it probably doesn't, but I think it does in my brain.
It does to me.
But yeah, go to www.gooddaysirpodcast.com and just click on community. You can get in. You can email us info@gooddaysirpodcast.com with complaints, questions, and show topic ideas, sticker requests, the infamous, mythical, ethereal, and that's not the word I'm thinking of. What am I thinking of? Anyway, beer brain. I did give a lot of stickers
away. Ghost stickers.
Give a lot of stickers away.
Phantom stickers.
Yeah, yeah. Elusive. That's what I was thinking of.
There you go.
Give a lot of stickers away. So hopefully they got applied to many objects in the world.
Are you encouraging vandalism?
Not at all. Only objects that you own yourself or are authorized to apply things to. All right, John. That's all I got. Unless you got something else.
Nope. To that, I say good day, sir. Ooh, you're
you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Stay focused. Talk about things that matter to people. You know? It's the economy, stupid.
That is amazing.